Welcome. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is Hugh Kingery, an old friend, and our conversation is focused on a small gray bird, the American Dipper, also known as ouzel. Welcome, Hugh.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
Hugh is the author of the American Dipper component of the Birds of North America, a comprehensive encyclopedia of bird species in the United States and Canada, published by the Cornell Ornithology Lab. As a source water state, Colorado has a long tradition of a healthy, vigorous American Dipper population.
Right. And the main thing that dippers need in the first place, and this is true of most birds, is suitable habitat.
Right.
And for the dipper, they need the same habitat year-round, fast-moving, clear and unpolluted streams, and they like cascades and riffles and waterfalls.
Right.
Their streams are rarely more than 50 feet wide or 6 feet deep. Although in the winter they'll use slightly wider and deeper streams. So this restricts them pretty much to the headwaters of the Rocky Mountain streams.
And being a source water state, we provide a good amount of habitat.
Yes. We're among the major recorders of dippers on various surveys that conducted nationwide, like the Breeding Bird Survey.
Right. Say a little more about the natural history of the American Dipper.
Well, the next thing is food. And they'll eat almost any aquatic insect. They have a variety of ways of getting after them. The food can be particularly larval life stages of things like caddisflies, mayflies, and diptera, which are midges and crane flies and mosquitoes. They can walk on the water and grab things. They can swim underwater and get stuff that way. The thing I like most to watch them is in the winter when they'll stand on a ledge of ice and then plunge into the water to grab something.
Right. Yeah, they are a hardy year-round mountain resident.
Indeed.
But they need open water to find...
They need open water, so if the upper reaches of the stream freeze, that forces the ones who are breeding there downstream. And apparently puts the migrants, the ones from upstream, at something of a disadvantage, because the ones downstream seem to be healthier and hardier and have more success breeding their year-round territory. And they do set up winter spaces or winter territories, and you can see them chasing each other up and downstream when they're trying to defend it.
Somebody's pushing the boundaries?
Yeah. And they're very noisy. The streams make a lot of noise, and so in order to hear themselves, the dippers make a lot of noise, and they have a very loud rattle, as well as a very loud song. And you often hear the song in September as well as in the spring.
Right.
Because in September and October, they're setting up those winter territories.
And for winter, their feather system's pretty critical.
They have half again as many feathers on their body as similar birds, as birds of similar sizes do, because of their, I suppose you'd say, aquatic lifestyle.
And in addition to these short, powerful wings and that upthrust tail, the feet are very impressive. And I realize they're serious feet because that's what enables dipper to hold onto the bottom and not get washed downstream.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Another thing is that dippers dip. And I think that's another way of showing them that people don't really know why dippers dip. But I think one of the reasons may be so that birds upstream can see them. Another possible reason is that if they dip while they're feeding, they can get a different angle of light on the stream and may be able to see the insect more readily.
The other remarkable thing for me is seeing fledglings on rocks in the spring runoff. I'm just filled with awe. It's a fierce initiation into life.
Well, it certainly is, and they're quite noisy after they fledge. And it's interesting about how they behave. Sometimes, not always, the parent dippers will split their brood between them and occupy different sections of the stream. And they're, with some songbirds, which includes dippers, a crucial song learning period happens shortly after they fledge from the nest.
The dipper is referred to as an indicator species. Can you tell us what that means?
If you have dippers, it suggests that you have an unpolluted stream that isn't full of various pollutants and things like that.
And you're updating your monograph on the American dipper. Is that pretty well finished?
I'm struggling with that.
You're struggling with
it. One thing we've left out is the nest site, because main criterion for a successful territory is having a decent nest site. And this requires a ledge or something similar that's protected overhead from the elements, that has difficult access so predators can't get to it, and may or may not have a spray of water on it.
In your 1996 monograph, you included a quote from two British authorities that healthy dipper population on upland rivers throughout the world indicate healthy river ecosystems.
Yeah, and that's what you were driving at before, that they show unpolluted streams.
And dipper will abandon polluted streams or those where the water is taken for irrigation or transmountain diversions?
Well, it depends on what's left. If it still offers the proper feeding area and a decent nesting area, they'll hang around. You know, a transmountain diversion may reduce the flow, but it can sometimes at least leave the flow. And another thing that happens, they readily adapt to human structures that provide the right nest structure. So when we put in roads, sometimes that improves their habitat, because the bridges provide ledges where the birds can nest.
Right. Yeah, the bridges are a benefit when they provide safe nest sites.
Right.
Well, I'm concerned about river pollution and local dipper population here in Carbondale. The song of source water can so easily become a stream of tears.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the stream in the Carbondale area, so I can't really comment on it.
Are you aware of any recovery successes where a polluted stream's been healed and a departed dipper population has returned and re-inhabited?
Well, in a way, I've just read about a situation on the Olympic Peninsula in the state of Washington.
Right.
There was a dam across the Elwha River.
Right.
And there was a good population of healthy dippers below it, and those above it, there were some up there, but the ones below had a lot more indications of healthy breeding, like they had many more multiple broods and were more likely to stay there in the winter. And they removed the dam on the river, and after that, there were more dippers upstream, and they started reflecting the healthier status of the ones that had been below the dam. So, yes, they can come back when things improve.
Yeah, wow. I wasn't aware of that benefit, but it makes sense. When that dam came down, I knew the salmon started going right back up.
Yeah, and that was it. The salmon seem to add nutrients both when the dipper eat their eggs and from some kind of bottom-up enrichment that happens when salmon get into the stream.
Right. And And so when available, they will eat eggs.
Yes, fish eggs.
Right, and flying insects.
Right. Although mostly they like the stuff that's in the river, like the larvae of the various insects I mentioned.
Right. You know, another concern I'm realizing is we're having increasingly hot days here, and we're going to begin to approach what you identified as the upper critical temperature Dipper can cope with. You in 1996, you noted the bird probably can't survive air temperatures above 36 degrees centigrade or 96.8 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right, and I don't really, that was a paper that a researcher wrote, and I don't really have any details about it. But as you say, we're certainly experiencing a lot of hot weather this summer.
Boy, we are too.
Both where you live and where we live.
Yes. So the second edition of the Colorado Breeding Bird Atlas suggests there's some worrisome trends, and there may be an apparent decline in our state's dipper population, and they suggested a real need for intensive study.
Yeah, I agree with that. A Breeding Bird Atlas is conducted in a block that's essentially 3 miles on a side. And when we do the atlas, why, we survey one block in each topographic map, and there are 6 blocks in the topographic map, so we survey 1/6 of the state. And we call those blocks that we survey priority blocks. The second atlas found dippers in 27% fewer blocks than the first atlas. And it's a little hard to analyze that. I don't know what the causes are, because in non-priority blocks, atlas is found in a good deal more sites. The first atlas found them in 250 atlas blocks, and the second one in 180. So it was a substantial decrease.
Right. Well, I certainly know over the years I've seen fewer and fewer, and then, you know, very worrisome this year.
And I haven't been getting out into the mountains so much, so I can't really give any personal ideas.
You're listening to Shifting Gears, and we're in a conversation with Hugh Kingery about the aquatic songbird known as the American Dipper. Fortunately, we've got source water places I can go and have spent a lot of time watching them and watching them feed their young in the nest this spring and summer. It's there's certainly something that happens to me when I watch this little bird dive into a source water river and then explode back out and land on the rock right where it was dancing before.
And I particularly like to see them doing that off of the ice ledges, because it seems so nonsensical. But they're equipped with their feathers and their swimming abilities to get in there, get the insect, come out, and shake off the water and persist.
And they can function well at very low temperatures.
Indeed. I think there may be a lower limit, but they show up in Alaska, and there are even some streams up there where there are only little patches of open water, and the dippers spend the winter in those little patches. Often they involve hot springs that keep the water open.
Right. Well, there's certainly something beautiful and magical about watching them, and you realize you're witnessing something really special on Earth.
I think that's true, but I think that's true of a lot of birds as well. We enjoy seeing other stuff in our yard, and yet the dipper is a unique and magical critter.
It certainly is. Anything else you would want to say about them?
I think you've wrung out everything I can come up with.
Well, it's been interesting, because over the last year I've been doing a series of conversations about trust and realize today we're arriving from a different direction at a new perspective, and perhaps the question now is whether source water and American Dipper can trust the innate long-term intelligence of human life-sustaining good-heartedness. Because as long as humans have walked the earth, we've fed on Mother Earth's life-sustaining intelligence and partnerships, and we need to remember how to match her gifts with our own intelligence and stature.
That's an eloquent statement.
Well, I'm honored. Thank you. Coming from you, I take that with much gratitude. Thank you, Hugh.
You're welcome.
This is William Evans. You've been listening to Shifting Gears and a conversation with Hugh Kingery about American Dipper, an aquatic songbird and a source water indicator species. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.